Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph from Monday, March 30th, 2026. From the front page, we the people have the power. Crowds gather in BN, joining nationwide No Kings rallies. By D. Jack Elkery and Matus Janik. Bloomington. Issa Roman stood on a bench in downtown Bloomington, her right arm stretched to the sky, in the six-year-old's hand a defiant declaration, No Kings. She was there with her mother, Gabby Traxler Roman, and their family. It was important for us to show them that the community can come out together and show that we don't agree with what's happening in our country, and that there's a way for them to be involved, even though they're not able to vote, Traxler Roman said. They were joined by more than 2,000 people on the south lawn of the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts to participate in the nationwide No Kings rally. More than 3,100 of these protests were held Saturday across the United States and abroad, drawing an expected 9 million people in opposition to the Trump administration's policies and actions, according to the Associated Press. One of the things I've really struggled with over the last few years is that my daughter has less rights than I did growing up, Traxler Roman said, and that's infuriating and makes me want to do better for her. Hope and community. The protests were organized nationwide by 50501, a volunteer group that organizes protest and political action in all 50 states. We put countless hours into this initiative, said Lily Linden, spokesperson for Bloomington Normal 50501. And it means a lot to us to see so many people show up and recognize our efforts. And I do have hope, especially with a turnout like this. The protest at the BPCA was the first of two scheduled for Saturday, with the second taking place in Uptown Normal later in the day. The second protest, organized by Voices of Reason, gave local elected officials a chance to speak to the crowd gathered there. But in Bloomington, those in attendance participated in chants and singing, with a focus on elevating community groups. Organizations like the ACLU of Central Illinois, Blow No Helps, Normal Women Rising, Normal Now, the Immigration Project, Prairie Pride Coalition, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Bloomington Normal, and others were present, sharing information about available services, resources, and ways to lead action. The framers of the Constitution divided power among three equal branches, said Carol Coos, chairperson of the ACLU of Central Illinois. But in the preamble to that document, they identified the real holders of power in our country. We, the people. The rights are ours to create and ours to protect. We, the people, have the power, not a president who thinks he's a king. The crowd's demographics were wide-ranging from all ages, genders, and backgrounds, including the likes of the U.S. military, like Jeff Jardine, who served in the Air Force. Protesting with other veterans means we haven't given up yet. There's still enough of us that believe in democracy and the future and realize that we're on the precipice of disaster, he said. I want to pass on democracy to the future, and it's in peril right now because we have a dictator in the White House. For many, like Normal's Charlotte Steiger, this was not their first protest. Steiger was at the last No Kings protest in October, which the Pantograph estimated drew 1,700 people. Saturday's turnout implies that people are not desensitized to what's going on in government yet, Steiger said. That's what reassures me about this turnout. Others were protesting for the first time, like 22-year-old Jessica Carter. I've never been to a protest before, and I think before this whole situation amping up, there was a little bit of fear surrounding going to a protest, said Carter, a senior at ISU. People will say that they will support it from a distance, but I feel like things are too intense to ignore right now. and people are being treated in a way that just should never be okay with anybody. Wyatt Fisher, 23, brought Carter on Saturday, having attended a similar protest at the same location last year. Fisher said he believes it has always been a safe and inviting environment with other like-minded people. Everyone here just cares about the same issues, and we're all here because we care about the county and we want it to be a better place, Fisher said. I didn't know if I needed to bring anything or do anything to prepare, but I just showed up. Now I would say if you know people, bring them with you. One of Carter's main objections with the Trump administration is increased rhetoric attacking people who identify as LGBTQ, and she hopes to see that treatment replaced with more support and resources, like those available at Saturday's event, she said. There's just a feeling of community here, and you feel patriotic, and I personally have not felt patriotic in a very long time, Carter said. Take action. Get involved. Kathleen Shirk, co-founder of Normal Women Rising, decried the Trump administration's deployment of agents from Border Patrol and ICE, as well as attacks against diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. In January, federal agents shot and killed Renee Nicole Good and Alex Preddy during an enhanced immigration crackdown in Minneapolis. After they were killed, officials in this Trump administration, like Stephen Miller and Kristi Noem, then the head of the DHS, accused Good and Preddy of domestic terrorism. They were murdered in the street for standing up, and somehow they are the domestic terrorists, Shirk said to the crowd gathered downtown. They've canceled inclusion to make space for nepotism in its purest form. They've built an altar to MAGA and called it Christianity. And I will say I am a convicted Christian, and that is not Christianity. They want us to swallow all of this and call it patriotism. As a pacifist, Fisher said he is opposed to the continued war with Iran, as well as the ongoing actions of ICE agents throughout the country. A big thing for me is how the country is treating its own citizens and neighbors, he said. Specifically with ICE, it definitely needs to be gotten rid of, or reformed, at the very least. Tessa Bleers, 21, a senior at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, said the Bloomington protest was a great opportunity to connect with her friends and others who are inspired by democracy and want to see change. Take action on your words, she said. If you're saying that you believe in something, but you're not willing to do anything, I don't believe you. Wesley LeBron, 21, said people should feel free to express themselves, especially when they feel the government continues to fail them. Obviously, the First Amendment exists to have these protests, said LeBron, a senior at ISU. As someone coming from a Hispanic background, seeing people being dehumanized daily, it becomes hard to turn a blind eye and not stand up. But standing up requires more than a few hours on a Saturday here and there. I'd love to see people continue to get involved outside of these larger protests, Lyndon said. Whether that's getting involved in a local community group, talking to friends and neighbors about supporting our democracy, getting out and voting, especially. Turning to page 2 of the Monday, March 30th edition of the Pantograph, today's Flick Fact. Today's question. One of Bloomington's most beautiful, yet largely unknown areas, is the 1500 block of South Oak Street near Highland Park Golf Course. Do you know what makes it one of Bloomington Normal's most unique residential areas? Today's answer. Almost all of the homes, 5 in fact, are log cabins, thanks to Dean and Betty Beer and their son Barry, who began building there nearly 50 years ago. As one admirer puts it, the beautiful log homes give a feeling of being somewhere in the North Woods, totally unlike anything else in town. And yet, it remains one of Bloomington Normal's best-kept secrets. How time flies. 100 years ago, March 30th, 1926. Eggs are going into storage. It seems a bit early in view of the frequent snow flurries and chilling atmospheres, but the dealers know their stuff. The average quantity stored each year ranges around 10 million cases. Buyers are going through central Illinois and are paying 25 to 27 cents, as against 26 to 28 a year ago. March 30th, 1951, Truth or Consequences radio program has picked Mr. and Mrs. R.W. Lamb and daughter Cynthia Lou to become guests of the Air Force at Albuquerque, New Mexico. Mr. and Mrs. Lamb will fly to Albuquerque to meet their son, Private Jack Lamb. 50 years ago, March 30th, 1976, fast time will be slow coming this year. There are no fewer than 11 daylight savings time bills awaiting in the U.S. House of Representatives. Proposals to move up daylight time won't bother 1976. That means daylight time will begin the last Sunday in April. 25 years ago, March 30th, 2001, Frontier Airlines' single flight leaves Bloomington Central Illinois Regional Airport before the sun comes up and arrives in the Twin Cities well after dark. It is for the first time, then, that the airline will fly off into the sunset when it makes its final trip between Bloomington and Denver on March 31st. Sam Funk, a normal resident who picked up Ruth Trimmer, his mother-in-law, from Frontier's 11:25 p.m. arrival on March 28th, said he and his family use the airline for business and recreation. "It's a handy service," he said. "It's really nice to have the direct flights." Turning to the sports page, Section B, page 1, college men's basketball, Illinois, back in the Final Four. Underwood, better than I've ever dreamed it would be, by Scott Ritchie, the News Gazette. Houston, Brad Underwood made his way up the ladder at the south end of the Toyota Center Court with golden scissors in hand. All it took were a few snips to finish the job his players and assistant coaches had started. Then what was left of the net was in Underwood's hand. It was at that point the Illinois coach turned, arms raised, net draped around his neck, and pointed to the Illini fans in the stands. As much as the celebratory moment was for the Illinois team, players, coaches, manager, staff, Underwood made a point to acknowledge the support that made that moment possible. A moment that will etch this Illinois team into program history after a 71-59 victory against Big Ten rival Iowa on Saturday night in Houston extended the Illini season. Next stop, Final Four. "It's better than I've dreamed it would be," Underwood said. "I knew we would get here. I don't mean that to sound arrogant. You know me. I'm not afraid, and I'm sure not going to run from a challenge. The greatest moment was standing on the ladder and holding the net, because that was for the people. I could look up there and could see the crowd. I could imagine what's going on Green Street right now, and on our campus. You come with a vision to try to make something great, and you understand you're creating memories for a lot of people. That's something I take a lot of enjoyment in. That's a really positive moment. I didn't doubt we would get there. I just didn't know when. I knew it was hard. I'm very, very grateful for everyone who helped along the way." Saturday night's celebration took on many forms. Offensive coordinator Tyler Underwood was the first to embrace his dad, while Keaton Wagler again had the pleasure of dribbling out the clock for the second time in 3 days in Houston. A hug between father and son that turned into a group celebration with Director of Operation Joey Biggs and Assistant Coach Zach Hammer, also wrapped up by the Illinois coach. Zadomir Isovich got a Croatian flag from someone in the stands and immediately draped it across his shoulders. Tomislav Ivicic carried the Final Four trophy held high over his head. Kylan Boswell and Brandon Lee made off with a South Region bracket big enough that both needed to carry it. Ben Hormischeris shared a moment alone with his wife Adelia after celebrating with his team. Celebration of a win Illinois knew was possible. Celebration of a spot in the Final Four Illinois knew it could claim. "We know how good we are," Tomislav Ivicic said. "It's not even that. We know how hard we worked for these moments, all summer, listening to Coach Brad, even when we don't want to. If somebody doesn't feel like practicing, you have to. That's your job. We pushed each other to do more for moments like this, and we're not done. We have a great, great team here. Great leadership from everybody. Everyone cares an insane amount. Everybody was dreaming of this moment. Nobody plays here for the name on the back, but the name on the front. Everybody got into their role and maybe took a little bit from themselves to give back to the team. That's what matters in the end. If you want to win as a team, that's what teams need to do. Sacrifice a lot for each other. Play together and never give up." The never give up part was necessary Saturday night against Iowa. The Hawkeyes scored the game's first 9 points and had a double-digit lead after just more than 4 minutes. Illinois answered with a 9-0 run of its own immediately after Iowa pushed its lead to double figures. All of a sudden, it was a ball game again. A close one, certainly. Before the Illini began to pull away late in the second half, and secured its 12-point victory with 6 consecutive free throws between Wagler and Boswell. "We expected them to be that aggressive," Illinois forward David Merkovich said. "Our biggest point was to be locked in for 40 minutes. Just play for 40, because basketball is a fast game, and it can turn in a second." Merkovich said he was fighting off tears in the final minutes of the game. Tracks ran down the face of associate head coach Orlando Antigua after shedding some tears of joy. And they were far from the only ones overcome by the emotions of this team reaching a Final Four, a first for Illinois in 21 years. "I had so much adrenaline, so much emotion," said Merkovich, adding Saturday's celebration was bigger than when SC Derby beat Partizan in the Super Cup. "I don't have the vocabulary to imagine this feeling. I forgot everything after the game finished. I don't remember a thing. It was pure emotion." It's an unbelievable feeling when a whole year you believe in something and after some bad games everyone doubts you and thinks you're no good. But you know you're good and believe in each other. You've just got to wait. You've got to be patient to prove all that. When that moment came, it's such a beautiful feeling when you see all of your hard work paying off and all of your belief. Zadomir Ivicic said a few words wouldn't be enough to describe his feelings. That would need a paragraph. "We all believe," the 7'2" forward center said. "We have a special group of guys who are willing to give everything, willing to sacrifice for each other, and it paid off. It means everything. We're one step closer to our goal." That's the part Brad Underwood emphasized after the confetti had dropped. The nets were cut down and the super soakers emptied. Reaching the Final Four was just another step in the process. "You can't just be happy to get there, and we're not going to do that," the Illinois coach said. "We are not wired that way. I'm not wired that way. We will go and compete." From page 11, National and World News, The Digest. Sudan paramilitaries kill at least 14 in attack. Cairo. An attack by Sudanese paramilitaries and their allied rebels in the central region of Kordofan killed at least 14 people, including 5 children and 2 women, a medical group said Sunday in the latest deadly assault of the Sudan war. The Rapid Support Forces and their allies in the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North launched a major offensive on Saturday in Diling, the capital of South Kordofan province. The military, which recently broke the RSF siege on the city, said it fended off the attack. The Sudan Doctors Network, a group tracking the war, said the RSF and their allies shelled residential areas in the city amid dire humanitarian conditions. It said the hours-long attack wounded at least 23 others, including 7 more children, in addition to those killed. Britain. People in the English city of Derby arrested a man on suspicion of attempted murder after a car struck a number of pedestrians in the busy city center, sending 7 people to hospitals. Counterterrorism officers were assisting local police in the investigation. Arab League. Arab foreign ministers on Sunday appointed veteran Egyptian diplomat Nabil Fahmy as the head of the 22-member Arab League at a time when the Middle East is plunged in a month-long Iran war that shows no sign of abating. Germany. Hundreds of partygoers fled a dance club in southwestern Germany when a fire broke out in the early hours of Sunday. None of the 750 guests were injured in the event in Kiel, a town near the French border, emergency services said. Ukraine war. A Russian strike on the eastern Ukrainian city of Kramatorsk killed 3 people and injured 13 Sunday, police said, one of several attacks in frontline areas. Israel. The Israeli military said Sunday it found no negligence or ethical failures by officers involved in the killing of Israeli farmer Ofer Moskovitz, 60, near the Lebanese frontier earlier this month. Airports warn travelers of delays. Border czar Homan hopes workers will be paid Monday or Tuesday. Associated Press. Even after Donald Trump ordered emergency pay for Transportation Security Administration agents to ease long security lines, major U.S. airports on Sunday were still urging travelers to arrive hours early, and federal immigration officers brought in to help may not be leaving anytime soon. Trump's executive order on Friday instructed the Department of Homeland Security to pay TSA officers immediately, although it's unclear how quickly travelers will see an impact. The move comes during a busy travel stretch, with spring breaks underway and Passover and Easter approaching. Tens of thousands of TSA employees have been working without pay since DHS funding lapsed on February 14th. The department's shutdown reached 44 days on Sunday, eclipsing the record 43-day shutdown last fall that affected all of the federal government. Trump deployed ICE agents to some airports a week ago to help with security as TSA callouts rose nationwide. Making the rounds on Sunday morning news shows, White House border czar Tom Homan said the length of the ICE airport deployments depends on how many TSA employees return to work after they start receiving their pay. ICE is there to help our brothers and sisters in TSA. We'll be there as long as they need us until they get back to normal operations and feel like those airports are secure, he told CBS Face the Nation. Speaking on CNN's State of the Union, Homan said it also depends on how many TSA agents have actually quit and have no plan on coming back. Nearly 500 TSA officers have quit since the shutdown started, according to DHS. Homan, in his CNN interview, said he hopes TSA officers will be paid by Monday or Tuesday. It's good news because these officers are struggling, Homan said. They can't feed their families or pay their rent. Also on Sunday, Charlotte Douglas International Airport said in a social media post that back pay could arrive for TSA agents beginning Monday. While this action provides critical relief, CLT supports long-term solutions to ensure continued stability for this essential workforce, the airport said. Johnny Jones, Secretary-Treasurer of the American Federation of Government Employees TSA chapter, said Sunday he has heard from workers worried they may not receive their full back pay because TSA management was giving very short notice to begin processing payments. This is a disaster in progress, Jones said. Some of the busiest airports in the United States continued to ask travelers to arrive hours before their departure time in order to get through security lines. Houston's main airport, George Bush Intercontinental, warned Sunday evening that TSA wait times could reach 4 hours or longer. Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport also told passengers to arrive at least 4 hours early for both domestic and international flights. LaGuardia Airport posted an alert Sunday evening on its website that says TSA lines are currently longer than usual. Illinois State University, Workers Move Closer to Strike in Contract Fight by Drew Zimmerman, Normal. Illinois State University employees, represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 1110, have voted to authorize a strike. Chuck Carver, president of Local 1110, announced the move during a news conference at Stevenson Hall. Members voted to authorize the strike with nearly 97% approval, and a 10-day notice effective April 8th was delivered to ISU president on Thursday. President Tarhul, your time to do the right thing is running out, Carver said. We are united and determined to do whatever it takes to get a fair contract we deserve. The union's roughly 350 employees who work in ISU's buildings, grounds, and dining centers have been without a contract for nearly a year and without a pay increase for nearly two. As of March 17th, they had held 26 negotiation sessions and 3 mediation sessions with a federal mediator. According to a statement from the university, ISU has worked and will continue to work to reach a fair and fiscally responsible contract agreement that addresses the concerns raised by Ask Me. We are also committed to the principle that the university must remain physically prudent, resilient, and sustainable for the long term, the statement read. This means we must balance expenditures against revenues and strive to offer competitive wages, all while seeking to remain affordable for students and families. Andrew Franzen, a sophomore history major at ISU, said that employees in the local 1110 are the ones who keep the lights on at ISU. He said the administration has decided that profiteering is more important. If they can afford a $100 million College of Engineering, if they can afford a $2 million staircase, and if they can afford all these other projects, why can't they afford to pay the people that keep this campus alive? He said. Last month, the union voted down ISU's last, best, and final offer for a contract, which the university presented January 30th. This 5-year contract would have resulted in employees receiving a 15.5% increase to their base pay by July 1st, 2029, a one-time $350 lump sum payment for successful ratification, and a 30-50% increase in shift differential, depending on the time of day that employees' shifts begin. However, the contract did not include any retroactive increase for the past 9 months. The union has been without a contract. Representatives said the administration also refused to extend a provision that if non-union employees receive a higher wage increase, union members also receive it. Tia Reese, secretary for Local 1110, said many union members in McLean County are paid less than $20 an hour. Carver has criticized the shift differentials, which amounted to 10 to 20 cents, as well as the university's decision to publicly post the terms of the rejected contract. Last week, union members picketed outside Felmley Hall for a new contract. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph from Monday, March 30th, 2026. Please stay tuned.